If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow, and welcome to the Thursday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. All right, it's sort of gender-centric today, maybe. Suzanne Muchen will be here a little bit later in the next half hour. In fact, she's the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can hear that on WGNplus.com. And we often talk about issues of gender in the workplace and workplace issues for women. When Suzanne comes by, we've got a great story about the U.S. women's soccer team coming up. But I have a hard time sometimes because she pushes the fact that we need more women as CEOs. And when I hear that, well, maybe men can't do the job. There's a different way to look at it. It's called conscious capitalism or Shakti leadership. A couple of ways to do that. We have a couple of guests who are going to talk to me about that. So I want to say welcome to the program to Raj Sisodia and to Neil Myabhat.
Hey, Steve.
Thank you.
All right.
First,
there's Neil Myabhat and Raj on the line as well. Raj, you start because you are the founder of conscious capitalism. What does that mean?
Well, you know, a number of years ago, we started a movement to change the narrative around the way we think about business. We believe that business can be an extraordinarily powerful, positive force in multiple ways, but it has been narrowly construed as being just about making money and shareholder wealth. And so the idea that businesses should have a higher purpose beyond profit, that we should consciously seek to create well-being for all stakeholders and not just for shareholders, so employees, customers, communities, suppliers, that we have leaders who care about people and who care about the purpose ahead of power and personal enrichment, and that we have cultures that are filled with caring and trust and transparency rather than the extraordinary amount of fear and stress that pervades so many of our workplaces.
Okay, but the purpose, of a business is to bring in money, right? It's not to make people feel good.
No, you can make money while you're also making other things happen in a positive way. You don't have to have negative consequences. Yes, absolutely. And my research and others also show that companies that truly do operate in this way, they align everything together, they harness extraordinary human energies, and they outperform financially over the long term, dramatically so, 9-1 over a 10-year period in my book, Firms of Endearment. And at the same time, as I said, they're creating well-being and flourishing for now, everybody they touch.
Neil Myabhat, one of the things that interests me is this idea that we need more, we need to bring more of the positivity of the female gender qualities into the workplace. And the way I read about that, it's that doesn't necessarily mean it has to come in the form of a female. Great if it does, wonderful if it does, but it doesn't mean that to succeed it has to be one gender or another. It has to be those gender qualities, and we have those capabilities in all of us. Is that a right way to read that?
Yes, absolutely, Steve. And the idea of psychological wholeness, which is the journey to maturation, which we have to make, whether we like it or not, as human beings and as leaders, is really about that. Is when we are whole, we have both capacities of masculine and feminine within us. So, for example, yes, you want to be strong and clear as a leader, but you also want to be soft and compassionate and know how to take your people along. So right there you have the masculine and feminine capacities outlined. And regardless of being a man or a woman, we are capable of these qualities and these capacities. For whatever reason, we have been socialized to overvalue the masculine over millennia and undervalue and not reward or take for granted the feminine capacities.
I want to read a sentence to you from some of the material I read to prompt my next question. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a focus on the best parts of masculine values, but rather on the negative masculine qualities like domination, aggression, competition, focus on winning at all costs, zero-sum games, things like that. Okay, if those are the negative, what are the positive masculine values?
I think decisiveness, strength, clarity, direction, vision, sometimes, you know, tough love.
I'm feeling better about myself now, Amelia. I didn't think I had any positive. I thought all those qualities, Roz, were the only ones I had were the negative ones.
I would add focus and discipline also to that list. I mean, again, all of us have them. We kind of tend to put them in buckets. But those are some of the mature masculine qualities.
All right, so we talk leadership here, and we talk about the business place. So, Neil Gambat, how does someone who's running a business, and I know Whole Foods is one that does this well, even the Container Store does this well, but how does someone who's running a business, whether it's a hot dog stand or a car manufacturing company, bring in this sort of balance of different values without doing it by quota?
I think just to be aware, everything begins with self-awareness and checking in. Am I focused on the task to the neglect of my relationships? If at every given moment I can check in and ask, to what extent am I leveraging both the capacity to do the job well as well as the ability to do it nicely. I mean, take people along, make people feel inspired and good about who they are and why they are here. This is something you do everywhere. You don't have to be a leader of a mega corporation. You can be running a small little entrepreneurship yourself. You meet people. Everything is about people. You do not exist without people. And how am I showing up as a person? How am I remembering that I'm dealing with a human being right here? And yes, the job needs to get done, but not to the neglect of the person I'm dealing with.
A term that I hear a lot is mindfulness, and maybe that's right, but it sounds to me like it's just a consciousness. It's a consciousness with each moment.
Yes, and in our book we call that presence. Am I present? When I'm not present in the moment, I'm absent. And I'm kind of abducted by my ego and my fear and my need to dominate someone else in order for me to feel better. That's just a coping strategy, which is not true. It's not real. It doesn't serve. It doesn't give results.
Neil Gambat and Roz Sisodia, thank you very much for joining the Business Lunch today. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Bill Geiger, Chicago's retirement planning expert, is in the studio. Bill, welcome back to this program.
Nice to be here, sir.
Since we last talked, I suppose the Dow has gone from a deep dive to a recovery and has made some ground, but still risky territory.
Still risky territory, yeah.
How do you know when it's time, how to balance the risk and the safety when the market is the way it's been this year so far?
Well, it's more about where you at in your life versus where the market's at. If you're 5 to 10 years away from retirement, you need to begin really treating the market as if it's risky every day, because right. You can't sustain the losses you could when you were 30.
So how old should you be when you start to put this stuff down on paper and, you know, start to make a plan? I mean, because a lot, you know, when you're 20, 30, you can be thinking about these things, right. But I don't know when you write it down.
And if you're 55 to 60 years old in that area, you really should be doing some serious planning, because if you lose half your portfolio at that age, similar to people did in 2008, it's going to change your entire retirement.
Right.
You're not going to retire the same way or at the same time.
You think we're at risk of something like that again? I mean, Donald Trump says there's going to be a massive recession if he doesn't win.
I don't know about that, but I've been nervous about this market for the last couple of years. And I read way too much. I worry too much.
Right.
But generally, I'm worrying ahead of time, and I felt uncomfortable with the market for a couple of years.
Do you think that, doesn't matter the candidate, but do you think that this election and the way things have been going has an impact on the market and the future of markets?
No.
You do not?
No, not whatsoever.
Really?
You go back in history and you look at Republicans, you look at Democrats, you look at whatever, the market's going to do what it's going to do, and it's primarily based upon the health of the economy. And the economy is not too strong right now.
Well, I was hearing, though, that the markets always want stability. Business wants stability. It seems like we're pretty unstable.
They may want it.
Maybe it's a different unstable, I think.
They want it, but they don't always get it.
Right. So what are the three things we should consider when it comes time to putting a retirement plan together?
Well, the three big challenges to preparing for retirement is, first of all, where are you going to get the income from on a dependable basis, on a monthly basis, to pay your bills and then some. How are you going to live in retirement? Where are you going to get the money to live? Where does that income come from?
Okay.
The second challenge is how do you stay up with inflation over what might be 20, 25, 30-year retirement? Basically 20 to 30 years of unemployment, if you will. The third challenge is how do you do the first two challenges and make sure that your money lasts you through that long retirement period?
Is there a magic formula? I mean, is there a number, or how do you figure it out?
You sit down and you talk about to a retirement planner about your specific needs, how old you are, how much you're going to need, when you plan on retiring, and you kind of work through things like that.
That an interesting interview. Well, I thought it was. I did the interview, but
it was interesting then.
Conversation earlier this week with some people from Bankrate, and they looked at who is saving more, who is saving less. And they said that the millennials are actually saving at a greater rate than any other generation alive right now.
Well, they're not paying for their own housing. They're not paying for their own food. They're living at home yet. They're not married. They're not doing traditional things. So they have the ability to save.
But that's a good thing, right? Because the millennials, and I know that we tend to talk about older generations, but, you know, some of the people still retiring now are going to retire with a pension. The millennials, there's going to be no such thing as a pension.
They'll be lucky if they retire with Social Security.
Right.
But they've got a long time to figure this out. The real serious issue are the folks that are 5 years out or so from retirement.
Are they saving enough for retirement?
The ones that we see are.
Yeah.
But in general, you read the literature, you read the press, and people are not.
What do you tell someone who's not? I mean, do you tell them to, you know, go back to the Wonder Bread and water? I mean, there must be strategies to help people save.
Yeah, you have it taken out before taxes. You have it taken out of your paycheck and put aside where you've never touched it. You've never had to make that decision. It's either through your 401k or through just saving into a mutual fund account,
right,
but you have it done before your taxes.
Okay, so I know you like to talk to people who have about $500,000 or more to invest, right?
Right.
If so they have that. They walk into your office. What's the first thing you do with them today?
Well, the first thing that we do is we really try to understand who we're sitting down in front of. What's important to them? How did they get where they're at in life? And then we go through the retirement planning process. And Steve, as we're talking about that, I know you're going to make an offer for the audience in just a moment. I'm going to sit down personally with the first five people that call into your offer to help them put together a retirement plan. And I can't do it for everybody. They have to have $500,000 or up in their portfolio. But I'm going to sit down with them personally and help them put together a plan for their retirement.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, sir.
Bill was just talking about this. You know, nothing can be more frustrating than working hard your entire life, saving as much as possible for retirement, and then having no idea how you're going to make your nest egg last 20, 30 years or more. And that's where Bill Geiger, Chicago's retirement planning expert, comes in. Bill joins us every Thursday. He would like to make this very special offer to you, a full-blown financial plan. It's a $3,000 value, absolutely free, no obligation, to the first five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. Just call 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. You deserve the security and independence of knowing that you're doing the right thing with your retirement nest egg. Be one of the first five callers for your complimentary, no-obligation, full-blown financial plan. You've earned it. Now it's time for your money to start working for you. Call Geiger Wealth Management today, 800-681-2498. Listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Suzanne Mushin is in the studio, the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can hear that at WGNplus.com. Suzanne, welcome.
Hey, Steve.
All right, so Frank Sennett was here earlier this week, and the Cranes was out with their list of the best places to work. And this year they also included the best places
for women.
For women to work.
Sure did.
It seems like people have been doing that for quite a while, so
This was a more in-depth analysis.
Right.
And as you saw, they even broke it out, right? Best places to work for women under 35 and over 35.
So what did we learn?
So, look, can we start at the top with is this even a good idea to take a look specifically at what places are good for women to work? Shouldn't all workplaces be good for everybody? Mm-hmm. It's sort of a rhetorical question, but you can answer it.
Well, I don't know if I can answer it, but if it might be a good place for parents to work or a good place for twins to work. I don't know. I understand why they're doing it.
I guess, although the truth is that when they found the factors that actually led to women saying this is a great place to work or not a great place to work, they weren't all that different right. from the standard factors you'd think. So pay, that's a big one, right? There was some complaint around wage inequality. This is now a growing issue. No surprises there, but clearly women called it out. Their relationship with their boss. Right. And it didn't say my male boss, my female boss. So if you really get down to the nitty gritty of what made something a great place for women to work, not so different from the regular companies.
And that's what fascinates me because I saw that, too.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at what they were judged by, flexibility and all those things. Those are all big issues to me.
Of course.
Values to me.
No doubt.
So is there now a difference in a good place for a woman to work as opposed to a man to work?
So we're now also getting into an era in which men are asking for very similar things, paternity leave, right, flexibility to be able to make it to your kids' games. I think the workplace in general is changing. I don't know how relevant, well, I'll say it differently. I hope this study isn't this relevant 3 years from
right.
now.
Well, I think its relevance points to the fact that we all care about the same things.
We do.
And it's not that women care about what men always cared about. It's what men are starting to care about, what women have always cared about.
And the millennials are driving that. So this rising generation of workers, male, female, transgender, they're all saying the same thing, which is we want more control. We want our workplace to feel safe. We want good pay for work that's meaningful to us.
I bet if you and I played soccer, you'd be better than me.
I don't know about that. You know, it was funny when I saw
and
you
I'd
this
make
morning.
More money.
You would make four times more money. When I saw you this morning, you were standing up. I usually see you sitting down. You'd be a good goalie.
I've got the reach.
That's
about all I've got.
Yeah.
But there's the U.S. women's soccer team.
Yes.
Filed a complaint, right, with the EEOC.
A real life lawsuit.
And they've got numbers.
Oh, they've numbers on both sides of the equation, which are shocking, right? So they have the numbers in terms of just the pay gap in general. They're being paid four times less. So let's just look at some of these numbers. So women make, for 20 matches per year, they can only make a maximum of $99,000, while the men can make $263,000.
I hear that, and I apply the NBA, WNBA standard. It's like, look, the men bring in a lot more money.
Okay.
That's just the way it works.
You know you're just, like, poking me with a stick right now.
I'm just teeing it up for you, but uh-huh. because, really, that is the response usually.
Correct.
You know, the NBA, right, well, a lot more people are involved in that.
No doubt. But advertisers are flocking because more people are watching.
And when it comes to this sport, soccer, national soccer, it's very different.
Very different. I mean, let's look at the actual return on investment, right? So the women's team this year is going to net almost $5 million. The men's team is at a loss of $1 million. So where's the justification here, honestly, Steve?
No, I think we're totally eye to eye on this. And I can't wait to see how this one comes out because this is the clearest of any of these complaints that we've seen.
I couldn't agree more. And it's also young women who have proven themselves. They're not whiners or complainers.
They
These are women.
Win.
They win. They're tough. They're strong. And here was the one comment I want to leave us with. One of the women in the interview, it wasn't Hope Solo, I can't remember who it was, but she said, we keep being told to be grateful that we can play a sport that we love and get paid for it. And she was really throwing that in the face of everyone to say, do any of us want to tell our employers, sure, pay me less because
right.
I love what I do.
I'm happy to be here.
Happy to get hit in the head every day, get a couple concussions because I love the game.
It's one to watch. Suzanne Muschen, co-host of The Big Payoff. Listen to it at WGNplus.com. Nice to see you
Good
again.
Good to see you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Mark Haraburda is in the studio, managing director of Bar Chart, and we're going to talk about something else he's directing in a minute or so. Mark, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with Bar Chart. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Bar Chart is a Chicago-based financial technology firm that focuses on market data and trading-related software. We've been around since the mid-90s.
And that brings us to FinTech, which is a show coming to town. What would you call it, a show, symposium, event? It's a half-day affair, right?
Yes, it's a conference. We're doing it in a new, more tech-focused way. It's on-stage presentations and at Venue 610, 610 South Michigan Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a series of on-stage, what we call lightning rounds, by firms that are in the fintech space, but specifically focused on financial markets and trading, which is, of course, you know, Chicago has a lot of roots there.
Right. What, explain for me what fintech is.
Sure. If you look at it in the broad sense, fintech, short for financial technology, is the intersection of financial-related services and technology, in a lot of ways, new technologies.
Are these, is this you dealing with individual investors or this company to company, or how about that?
Sure. You've got a lot of activity in fintech in the consumer space, and that's what most people hear about when it comes to, say, lending, mobile payments, robo-wealth advisors, things of that nature, all end-user consumer-facing. We're more so focused on the B2B side of it, at least our event is. It does spill over to consumer, the consumer side as well, but fintech is a very broad term. We've narrowed our focus with the Fintech Exchange to specifically focus on those firms involved in trading and financial markets.
Okay, good. So I'm going to be unfair and ask you about something else, because you just brought up the robo-trading.
Yep.
And we've been talking about that this week because of the fiduciary rule and all of that. Tell me, help me understand what that industry is going to look like in a year, 2 or 3 years from now.
Well, you've seen a lot of new ETFs come out, a lot of new 401k advisory services doing these age-targeted funds. A lot of it is not much different than that, is basically taking your age and putting you into a fund that's equivalent to when you might retire. So it's adjusting, you know, the risks you may be investing in or the firms you may be investing in for your age profile. The robo-advisors, yeah, they're going to take it a step further. They're going to ask you about your income. You may adjust your risk profile more. So they are going to factor in more variables, but ultimately it's an algorithm that's crunching what they're going to recommend you may invest in.
I have a financial advisor's office. Love them. They're up in Lake Forest. Love them. They have a great relationship. They know me. And the way those financial planners sell themselves is by saying, I know your story. I know how you feel. I know your, you know, emotions. That's going to be replaced by these companies, isn't it?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it has already. My background, you know, I'm not quite 40 yet, and I've never had a financial advisor. I have a background in finance.
Well, that
so
helps.
I've always,
that helps,
yeah,
Mark.
I've always self-directed my portfolio. But, yeah, I mean, you're going to see more and more people move to those models. But at the same time, there's still a place for to talk to a person.
Right, especially in a rough day. I need my hand held. All right, let's go back to fintech.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago's got a great history here with the markets and all of that. But I read that a lot of the fintech spending, the investment spending, is in New York or
yes.
London or
yep.
maybe San Francisco and not here.
Yeah, yeah, it sure has been. It is growing in Chicago. There's a lot of activity going on here from investments by staple firms in Chicago like CME Group, CBOE. They're making investments into smaller fintech companies.
Uh-huh.
There's new startups coming out. But Chicago certainly has been overshadowed by New York, San Francisco, and London. And one thing we're trying to do with our event is bring some of the focus back to Chicago.
Sometimes your client or your customer might be across the street and is looking across the country rather than just across the street to someone who could help them.
Yeah. I mean, the marketplace is certainly global. I mean, we have clients all across the world, and they may be across the street, but they may be talking to someone in Europe or in Asia.
Chicago does a lot to foster startups in technology and all of that. Have they done enough with fintech, or is there something you'd like to see from city government?
They have. They're doing a lot more. There's a group called Chicago Next, which is part of World Business Chicago. It's a group of CEOs and executives at local Chicago technology companies looking at ways to improve fintech-related economic growth, bring more jobs, bring more capital here. The Chicago Venture Summit is coming up to attract more venture firms to invest in Chicago-based companies.
That's Mark Haraburda, the director of FinTech Exchange 2016, coming up later this month. Where do people find more information?
You can go to fintechchicago.com, April 21st.
Beautiful. Thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.